episode of Calm, Cool, and Connected is brought to you by Bridgeside Medical Clinic, Chesapeake Integrated Behavioral Healthcare, and Edgar Casey's ARE.
Hello, and welcome to Calm, Cool, and Connected. I'm your host, Dr. Elizabeth Bedrick, and here with me is my co-host, Ashley Snyder. Hi, Hello. Ashley.
Hi.
So this is a really interesting topic we're going to be diving into today.
Diving into. That's yes, such good terminology like for this topic.
Clever. So today we're going to be talking about water. And what is it? It's defined as a tasteless, transparent, odorless, and nearly colorless chemical substance. But in reality, it is so much more than that. It is vital for all forms of life. It is the component that makes up most of our bodies, and the majority of our planet is covered by water. But what does water have to do with our mental health? Our next guest is a professor, published writer, and has won multiple awards for his research and writing. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Matthew Smith. Hi, Matthew.
Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Thanks.
So, Matthew, you have a little bit of a unique perspective on everything that you do with mental health because you're a professor of health history. I read one of your articles which talked about a humoral medicine and how water has been used to treat mental illness for around 2,500 years. So can you tell us what is your research, what is your views on water and how it's been used in the mental health realm throughout the years?
Sure. So one of the interesting things about water and how it's been used is how it's been used differently and the reasons behind it being used. So that article on humoral medicine, that focuses on the theory that our health is bound up in the four humors that were once believed to make up a human body. So the four humors were blood, black bile, yellow bile, and phlegm. And each of these humors had different properties. They're either cold or warm or dry or wet. And so your health deteriorated whenever the balance of all those things started to go in one way or another. So water being, well, you can be either have warm water or cold water, but it's always going to be wet. That was very useful in helping to rebalance the humors. But of course, water has also been used in many other ways. So think of healing in terms of spiritual healing, holy wells that are all over Europe and in North America as well. And not just in Western culture, but in lots of different cultures. Think of, you know, the healing river Ganges in India and that sort of thing. And more recently, water was used extensively in asylum during, say, between 1800 and 1950, where it was, we don't tend to think about hydrotherapy, water therapy in asylums, but many, many asylums had either, you know, warm kind of calming baths or they'd use cold water to shock you into sanity, you know, literally shock you out of your doldrums. And the resurgence we've seen recently in, say, natural or freshwater swimming, there's a connection there to that longstanding idea that water can be used to kind of snap you out of your bad mental state.
Okay. Now, when you talk about cold water kind of shocking someone and them using it in asylums, that sounds like it's maybe not the nicest way to use water.
Yeah.
Am I correct in that assumption?
Yeah, absolutely. There's this great description of from the 17th century of some just being pushed into a freezing cold water bath. And you know, that was meant to surprise and shock them out of the funk that they were in. And, you know, if you think about healing wells and those sorts of facilities, they weren't always pleasant experiences. It's not just like going into a warm bath. Now, the warm baths could be pretty horrible too. You could be stuck in one of these warm baths in an asylum for days, like 2 or 3 days without getting out. So, and actually, and I don't know if either of you saw Ratchet, about Nurse Ratchet from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest on Netflix, but there's a really shocking sequence there where they are put into really hot water and then dumped into freezing cold water. So, you know, all sorts of permutations of how to use it. And I think in terms of why, well, a lot of mental health treatments are bound up in the difficulty we find in trying to help people with mental health problems. That's why you see the extreme treatments often, is because nothing else works. And, you know, water being a plentiful substance in most places anyways, often gets used. And even where certain asylums pop up are often where there used to be either a holy well or a spa or healing waters of some form or another.
Okay, so that's a really good understanding of how water has been used externally in mental health situations. From an internal perspective, what is the research on how staying hydrated or consuming water is beneficial for mental health?
Well, if you go into, say, the period where you started to get the spas pop up in Germany, in Scandinavia, here in Scotland, and in North America as well, often there was the idea that there was something special about the water that had a healing property. So that could manifest itself if you bathed in it, but also sometimes if you drank it as well. And of course, you know, we know these days more about water in terms of just maintaining a healthy balance in your body, how that's very important and making sure that you have a balance. Again, you know, we get back to this theory of humoral balance. You need to have the right amount. So there's that as well. I think in terms of, you know, how it's been used internally, I think that's connected more in terms of other ways in which food and drink have been used in terms of treating mental health problems. But what's really interesting I see today is, especially since lockdown, there's been this real resurgence in therapeutic swimming. Certainly we've had that here in Scotland. So our New Year's is called Hogmanay, and there's this tradition of the Loony Duke, where on January 1st, you go to your nearest body of freezing cold water and you toss yourself into it. Probably the most famous one is on the River Forth near Edinburgh. And recently, I mean, this is a longstanding tradition, but recently people have started to talk about it more in terms of the mental health benefits. And, you know, if you think about it, what's interesting is that, yes, you have that cold shock, but you also have that, you know, that kind of enveloping feeling that you get when you're in water, and perhaps especially salty water when you're kind of buoyed up. It covers all of you. And I don't know if either of you swim, but I've recently taken up swimming once again, and it really amazed me how, you know, if you're exercising, sometimes all those nagging thoughts that have been bothering you go away. Well, if you're swimming, because all of your body's being stimulated by the water, it just seems to do that even more. You just feel really relaxed by the end of it. So I think it's something that a lot of people are doing, but it also makes us think about, well, what's the role of water on Earth more generally, and how we have to protect our water sources if we want to swim in it. I don't know about the local water sources near you, but you got to think, would I want to swim in that or not? And if the answer is no, then that kind of takes away perhaps a really valuable resource, not just for, you know, water in terms of how we use it in drinking and cleaning, but also in terms of our mental health potentially.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, those are all great points. I have a lot of clients who describe exactly what you just said in regard to using it as a coping skill, that they'll use it, they'll just go float in their pool for a while and just allow that, just that weightlessness is really soothing.
Yeah. It's interesting. I was talking to someone about a year or so ago who lives near the Lake District in England. And she has a group that she goes swimming with regularly. And so you also have this kind of camaraderie which can develop as well in group freshwater swimming. But she said that sometimes they would get such a sense of euphoria that they had to really look out for one another, because they'd start to think, you know, I can swim all the way across this lake. And when no, you shouldn't be trying to do that. You'll get cold, you get hypothermic, et cetera, et cetera. But there were, you know, the euphoria that would sometimes develop was such that they'd want to do things that they probably shouldn't. So, you know, that really makes me wonder about, you know, the sort of research we should be doing to try to explore why that's happening and the hormones that are firing, and I guess other ways in which we might be able to replicate that to make people improve their mental state and their well-being.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Matthew. You have given us so much great information today. Can you let our listeners know where they can find you?
All right. So probably the best thing would be to find me on Twitter at MPCSmith, or you can go to my neglected website, which is mattsmithbooks.com.
Thank you so much for joining us, Matthew. This has been a great time.
I'm going to go jump in a lock.
Yes. And thank you all for tuning into this episode of Calm, Cool, and Connected. Please make sure you find us on Facebook and Instagram, and also make sure you rate and subscribe to our podcast so that others can discover our content as well. Thank you again for joining in for this episode of Calm, Cool, and Connected. Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye.